Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. For more than a decade, Julia Angwin was a reporter for The Wall Street Journal, where she led a privacy investigative team. She was also part of the team that won a Pulitzer Prize for coverage of corporate corruption. In other words, she has deep and inside knowledge about who's watching you, what they know, and why it matters. Those are some of the questions answered in her new book, Dragnet Nation, a quest for privacy, security, and freedom in a world of relentless surveillance. The book thoroughly covers big data and the booming surveillance economy, as well as how Angwin attempts to escape the data dragnet herself. In a recent New York Times op-ed, she tallies the cost of protecting her personal information and asks whether privacy has become a luxury good. Julia Angwin, welcome to the program.
It's so great to be here.
Well, you point out, if you aren't paying for the product, you are the product, and say that we used to pay for services that are now free. So how are we paying now?
Essentially, nowadays, we get for free all sorts of things that we used to buy. Mostly, I'm talking about software. When I was growing up, I went to the store and I bought it in a package. It was shrink-wrapped, and you took it home and installed it. Now, you get your apps or your web browser for free. And so those companies need to make money some other way, and they basically make it by offering advertisers the opportunities to target you in different ways.
And this happens in Gmail. This happens in Facebook. I mean, we're probably all pretty familiar with it, but people don't seem to be all that concerned, or at least let's say they're not concerned enough to change their behavior by threats to privacy. So why are you?
Well, the thing is, we don't know the true cost of the data we're exchanging. So this isn't a very monetary exchange. It's like, I'm giving this data, but I don't know in the future, could it cost me a job if it's somehow used against me, or could it cost me my insurance? So the problem is we don't have a good sense of what the data is truly worth, which causes uncertainty.
You wrote in your op-ed, last year I spent more than $2,200 and countless hours trying to protect my privacy. Can you bring us through some of the steps you have taken to protect your data?
Sure. I mean, some of my steps were free, I would like to point out. So I did use, for instance, free software that protects my web browsing from being tracked by the advertisers that want to track you online. And I used some free software that anonymizes your location. It's called Tor, and basically makes it look like you're browsing from some place where you're not. But I also had to spend a lot of money on things that were very expensive. I got a separate phone, a burner phone that wasn't in my name, because essentially my phone is the perfect tracking device, and having it with me all the time, I realized that there wasn't that much I could do about it other than remove my name from it. So I basically got a phone paid with a fake name, and so that was very expensive to have a separate phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, similarly, I got a cloud. Instead of using Google Docs, I paid $200 for an encrypted cloud service where the data is encrypted and only I can unlock it. So the company that stores it doesn't have any access to looking at it.
Mm-hmm. You paid for a privacy filter to shield your laptop screen from other voyeurs, a subscription for a portable internet service to bypass untrusted connections, $5 a month service to give you disposable email name and address. You're introducing many readers to the personal data protection market. Is this a reliable market yet? You found that some of them were not so.
Yeah, so it's unfortunate. This is a very new market, and I was thrilled to find that there were companies that would sell me some privacy products. But then I was really disappointed when some of them didn't pan out. So, for instance, I paid this company, Trusted ID, $35 to opt me out of the biggest data brokers, mostly because these companies make it very difficult to remove your data from them, and they're not well-known companies. And I thought, these people had a service. It might be easier than me sitting here and faxing them my driver's license or whatever else they wanted.
Hmm.
But the problem was I paid the money, I waited a couple months, and then I thought, I wonder if this worked. How can I check? There's not really a way to check because these data brokers don't actually offer you access to your data. So essentially I called them as a reporter, each one, and said, did you opt me out? And unfortunately, yeah, I had been opted out of less than half of them.
Hmm. How does the economy for those kind of devices and services stack up against what you call the surveillance economy?
Well, the thing is that we as citizens and consumers are just underfunded in the arms race over surveillance technology. So as much as I tried to buy my way into the best technology or find some of the free tools that are really powerful, I'm not going to be able to compete with Google or the government. And so I just felt like this was an arms race that I was destined to lose.
You're an award-winning investigative reporter, Julia, but you carry a burner phone and a wallet lined with metallic film. I mean, should the rest of us be concerned or even scared?
I mean, I think that it's important for people to figure out what they're worried about and focus on that threat. You know, I sort of tried to address a whole range of threats so that people could sort of see what it took to protect their privacy. So on the phone front, I used the burner phone. I also had a bag that I put my phone in that blocks all the signals. You know, but some people might prefer what I did online in terms of switching off of Google search onto another search engine, DuckDuckGo. That might be the thing they're more concerned about, that their searches are not stored forever. So I hope that people will think about it and realize that whatever the thing they're worried about, there is probably a choice.
But this book was started long before revelations of NSA surveillance program. I'm not sure if you had any ideas about it, but do you feel like what people need to know has changed dramatically since you even started this book?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, one thing that is amazing is that, you know, people who follow this industry kind of thought that these things that Snowden mentioned were happening, but we didn't have any proof, right? There had been hints about the phone database collection. There had been some talk about the 702 PRISM program, but nobody really knew the scope of them. And what's been shocking to me as we've watched the revelations unfold is how under-paranoid I was, right? There was actually much more invasive stuff going on than I thought. I would never have guessed, actually, the NSA was trying to intercept the traffic from Angry Birds to the advertisers. It just didn't seem like it would be worth their time. And so I've been amazed that it hasn't sort of cause more people to reconsider, although maybe I'm wrong. It's hard to know right now. I think everyone's still digesting the revelations.
We're speaking with Julia Angwin. She's a senior reporter at ProPublica and author of a book called Dragnet Nation, A Quest for Privacy, Security, and Freedom in a World of Relentless Surveillance. She also wrote an op-ed in the New York Times about whether or not privacy has become a luxury good. You even suggest that we should cover our computer cameras when not in use. Tell us more about that.
Well, unfortunately, there are hackers out there, criminal hackers, who have come up with this clever idea of getting tricking people into clicking on some sort of link in email that installs software on their computer and allows the hackers to remotely control their camera. And so this has actually happened a number of times that they have filmed people in their bedrooms and then sent them emails basically extorting them, saying, look, I'm going to put these pictures of you undressed online if you don't pay me. And so the fact is that the kind of software that they use is very widely available, and so I think it's just prudent to put the sticker over the computer camera unless you're using it, and then you can take the sticker off while you're using the camera. But at least you know that when it's not in use, it really is not in use.
Well, the larger question in your op-ed, of course, whether privacy will be protected only for those who can afford it. What kind of questions should we be asking as a larger culture, as we develop different technology, as we look at regulation and policy about the cost of protection?
Well, I think of it sort of like cars. You know, we get into cars every day. They're really dangerous, but they're also incredibly useful. And we have assurances, though, that they've met some sort of minimum safety standards. And then people who want to buy a luxury car can buy sort of additional levels of safety standards. But we all have a baseline that we know is safe enough, and that also we have some rights. If we're in a car crash, we could sue or, you know, have some litigation over whether whose fault it was. And we just don't have that baseline for privacy. And then I think it would be okay to have a luxury market. But right now, it's really just a luxury that the other people are really left behind, and it doesn't seem like a fair market.
Julia, there are people who are advocating that we as citizens can shift the playing field and somehow use our own data, data that's being gathered all over the place, and using it for our own purposes, for government accountability, for our own sort of, you know, health and wellness goals. for keeping track of contaminants in our water, for all manner of things. Do you think it is possible to actually harness all of this big data for ourselves, or are there too many interests pushing the other way?
Well, I hope that we can, because I really love the idea of getting all my data for myself and learning from it. One thing that really frustrated me in my privacy journey in my book was that I couldn't get my data. For instance, I looked at my Google search data, and it was like incredibly revealing about sort of how I go through my day, and every minute I seemed to be Googling a different thing, and it was a real record of my thoughts. And I wanted it. I thought, oh, I could analyze this. Maybe I could learn something from this big data, because they had my searches going back to 2006, but I couldn't get it. So they don't let you download it. You can sort of view it online page by page, but you can't actually take it. And so I felt that in some ways we were fighting over the big data, right? They want to learn from my data, but they don't want me to learn from it. And I would like that to be equalized.
Julia Angwin, I want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
Julia Angwin, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, now senior reporter at ProPublica. We have much more on her new book, Dragnet Nation, including excerpts from the book and interviews. It's all at wordofmouthradio.org.